It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Now, the Caped Wonder Superman Podcast with Jay Towers and Jim Bowers on iHeartRadio.
On today's Caped Wonder Superman Podcast, it's another special episode and a special preview of some amazing Superman items. And Jim, they're from one of our favorite places.
Oh, the prop store of London. I love it. I mean, prop store is definitely the go-to place to pick up some fantastic Superman movie collectibles used in the movies, of course. And I am just so excited, Jay. Clapperboards, wigs, crystals, you name it. Just such a diverse collection this time around.
Well, the guy to give us that VIP preview is about to join us now. So let's welcome from the prop store, Stephen Lane.
Thanks, guys. Lovely to see you again. I always enjoy these conversations. I always look forward to them as well. And every year I hope that I'm going to find stuff that's good enough for you guys to want to talk to me about. So I'm happy that you guys are excited as well.
Well, and I always think we're good examples of not only fans of prop store, but we're also buyers from you can see behind us. Many of these things have been in front of you before, Stephen. So we're excited to talk to you.
Yeah, no, it's great. You guys become the custodians, the next people who are going to cherish and preserve these things. And I love learning about where they all end up over time. It's brilliant fun.
Well, let's start today with miniatures. You know, we've seen them come down the line in the past, and boy, I've never seen these before, and the condition they're in is just fantastic.
Yeah, these are amazing. Actually, when these came through the door, I was absolutely gobsmacked. Obviously, these are pieces that would have been constructed by Derek Meddings and his team. Condition-wise, you're absolutely right. Brilliant condition, except for obviously we've got a little bit of damage here on Non's hand, and he's missing a couple of fingers as well. But other than that, because they're made of resin fiberglass, certainly these two here from Superman 2, they're in brilliant condition. The paintwork on them is excellent. The paint finish on them is just exquisite. Really, really lifelike. Very, very detailed. Really caught the essence of them. And they're the perfect scale for displaying as well, aren't they? They just sit so wonderfully. The Supergirl is slightly different construction. These are sort of like a hollow resin. This is more of a cast resin, so it's a solid fill resin to it. You have real hair on the back of on the Supergirl's head here, and then the cape has some wire filaments that run in it, support the cape out, you know, to give it the correct shape to it. And also, if they then sort of blow a wind effect on it, you get a slight ruffle in it and maybe a slight ruffle in her hair as well. But as a set together, they just look fabulous.
They really do. And I have to assume that the Non and the Zod are from the Metropolis battle sequences that Richard Lester filmed with, you know, the battle with Superman. And the Supergirl just to me is the really the neatest of the three. I mean, I love the hair blowing effect, and all of the detail on that is just great.
Yeah, they're wonderful, and from the Meddings family. So, you know, these have great provenance with them as well. And they literally just stumbled across them wrapped up in a cardboard box in the garage after so many years. And sort of we got a phone call and an email, and we were like, really? You've actually got these still? And they brought them in, and here they are. We just had these very simple display stands constructed for them, really just to show them off and present them as best you can. You can't see on camera here, but there's actually a hole in the back of Non here as well. So I'm assuming at some point it would have been floated from above on that particular miniature. But yeah, they're wonderful pieces of history and instantly recognizable as well.
And I want to mention too, that the great thing about them that you really, when you see them up close, you mentioned the detail, but just when you see them on a screen and there you are in the UK from that distance, you really can see how well they film and how realistic they look and why they would be so fantastic in the film. I want to ask you about Stuart Freeborn, because you have in front of you on the table, you know, a Christopher Reeve there. And I'll mention that in the back here, And this is from you, Stephen, but there's a Jack O'Halloran, a Non. That's a Stewart as well. Those things are very special. Tell us about them.
Yeah, well, these have actually come to us as a couple of Stuart Freeborn pieces in the collection. So we've got the one on the table here, which is a fiberglass cast of Christopher Reeve. Obviously, it would have been taken literally from a plaster cast, a mold that would have been taken of his head to get it as lifelike as possible. This would have been used for probably some of the flying dummies, the full-size flying dummies that were created for special effects shots. And the rubber version that we have down below, that perhaps would have maybe been more used for some of the action sequences and where it's going to be, maybe coming close contact with other actors or something along those lines. But both of these pieces have actually been, in the personal collection of a friend, of a close family friend of Stuart Freeborn. They've been sitting with him for maybe some 30 plus years. He's emigrated this year, emptied his loft out and was sort of pulling these things out, the tea chest there as well, with the Superman stencil on the box as well. And again, phenomenal that they've just survived. Going back to the fiberglass head, you can actually see where makeup's been applied on this by Stuart. It's been sprayed, obviously, initially, but then there's actually makeup residue on there as well. And then you have this sort of very rough Velcro tape around the top of it, where they would have had a wig adhered to this. So it would have been a special effects wig rather than an actor-worn wig that would have been actually placed on this at the same time. Similar on the rubber head as well. It looks like, you've got some elements of residue there where you can see where something was attached. So, you've got sort of two Chris Reeves in the house here, and both from the same collection, and both were originally gifted by Stuart to this gentleman.
And there's a photograph out there of Stuart with all of these different heads that he's working on. You can see a Gene Hackman head and Ursa head, Non head like yours, Jay. But I always wondered what happened to them. They're just beautiful pieces.
Yeah, that's a great photograph, actually, isn't it? It's a black and white shot of him with them all lined up on the table. I remember the still. And we just assumed that the rest of them were lost over time, because things like this, generally speaking, because they're a little bit abstract and, going back during a period where this sort of material wasn't worth anything at all, it just had no value. It's only going to have been kept because Stuart would have kept it perhaps for a reference to use on future films, or might have had a reason to repurpose it. I mean, he was a real magpie. He just kept hold of everything just in case he could use them in the future. So I should think that's the only reason that these would have survived. There would have been no interest from the studio at that point to say, we've got to keep this and preserve it. It was just by chance, really, that Stuart had them.
Jim, do you want to head over to the clapperboard? That's an exciting piece.
Boy, it really is. And I've got a real thing for clappers for some reason. I remember when I used to go visit Richard Donner, obviously he loved clappers too, because he had an entire wall in his office of clappers and how they changed over the years. They went to plastic and then they had digital clappers. But this is a really unique one, Stephen. I've never seen one this shape before. Can you tell us a little more about it? I know it's a model clapper.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So this, as you say, is a model unit clapper. Shape-wise, I can't really tell you why it has a different sort of set of dimensions to a standard clapper that we've seen previously. There could well be a specific technical reason for that, but I'm not really too sure. I'm just going to come around the front of the table here while we've got it on close-up. But as you can see that it's got Brian Smithy's name on there, who directed... Sorry, I shouldn't have picked that up, actually. Let's just put that down while I talk about it. So it's got directed by Brian Smithy's. You'll know his name, of course, for his work that he did on this film. And he's also phenomenal model work on a number of other films, the Bond movies, Dune, etc. as well. Great to have the dates still on here and present. Obviously, we've got the camera operator's name here as well. And then I will just flip it over on the other side, because I think there we can see, and we see this from time to time, where you actually have some of the old numbers where they've sort of been using them, replacing them. Sometimes they'll overwrite them and they just sort of stick them on the back of the board as well. So it's a real good indicator of use there. Can you tell me, Jim, what was shot on the 23rd of June, 1978? Are you familiar enough with the schedule?
That's the guy to ask.
Well, exactly. Actually, I am. And by the way, I recently spoke with a guy who shot commercials at Pinewood Studios, and I acquired one of his clappers. you sometimes saw white tape like you see on that this particular clapper where they would write with dark lettering. And that was usually used when they were filming a dark scene because it was easier to see letters against white. And then if they were shooting during the day, they would shoot with chalk against black. So that's why you see both ways on a clapper. But that's 23 June 1978. And what they were filming was the Starship's journey to Earth.
Wow.
Hey, there we go. See, I'm learning from the master here. I love these conversations. I always learn something new from you guys.
Well, they also were filming miniatures of the XK-101 rocket in space. You might remember in the Donner cut, it was actually tumbling in space. And so it was at basically space scenes they were filming with this clapper at that time.
Right. Marvelous. Well, that's a great piece of information, isn't it? I think we'll have to add that to the description. Or maybe we shouldn't, Jim, because it may add value to it for some of the collectors out there, just in case you're thinking of possibly adding it to your collection.
Well, I'm thinking about it.
let's move on. Every year we seem to get crystals. And that's exciting to see. We've talked about this before, but there were an awful lot of them used in the production. You can see them in the film. I know sometimes they come back to you. Sometimes people maybe reconsign, but tell us about the ones we're looking at today.
Yes. Well, we got two crystals here on the table in front of me, two in the auction. So the larger of the two here originally sold through another auction house in the UK with the attribution that it was actually from Superman 4, the cut sequence with Marlon Brando. And that when it first came into us, he was absolutely convinced that that was what it was. And we looked at that scene again and again and again. And obviously, there's not great reference out there for it. You know, there is some stuff on YouTube. There are a few stills around, but everything's very, very blurry and lacks any definition. We don't feel that it's a good match to that particular crystal, just really through the coloration of this as much as anything else. So we've designated this and attributed this as a prototype because we feel that that's more likely the case. Maybe there's other information out there. Maybe there's other reference that perhaps one of you two have. But that's sort of the way that we wanted to position this without having more information. It's a very, very specific process to actually achieve this, which isn't undertaken anymore. And again, you may well be familiar with this already, but it was actually a dip dye process onto the acrylic. And it was using certain materials actually that are too hazardous. The chemicals are too hazardous to use today. So that's how specifically these were actually died during this period. So we're certain that the process that's been used is correct for the production. We're confident that the way that the facets present and the way the crystal presents is that it's something to do with the filming, but we haven't been able to match this particular one up on the screen.
This really displays beautifully.
It does. Yeah. And it's a really good size for it as well. So I think for even though it's a prototype, you know, the fact that it has the attribution to the production there, sure. I think it's a wonderful example of it. And it's not one that we've seen like it previously. Mm-hmm. Whereas, of course, the other version that we have seen previously, the style down here, which is the more familiar, clear version. I think, again, you know, I love these things. I don't mind. They can turn up as many times as they want to. I think they're just wonderful pieces, wonderful mementos from the movie. Again, you can set these up. You can display them with a little LED to catch some light on them or something along those lines, and they just really present.
They look fantastic. And then we should probably, while we're still on the table, talk about two Christopher Reeve wigs that are also spectacular.
Yes, I love these. I chased these in for maybe 18 months. I knew that this particular person had them. It was a friend of a friend. And it was constant phone calls and emails and messages to the first contact that I had, trying to get an introduction to the second guy. Finally got introduced to the second guy. He'd had them since production. They had been worn many, many times to fancy dresses, parties, and for just dress-up occasions. So when these came in, these were proper Rod Stewart style, hair all over the place. and I actually took them to a wig specialist with all the reference images that we could and had them redressed and refinished so that they really present in the style that they need to be presented in to make them fully identifiable. Both of them are really nicely labeled. Of course, who would guess just by changing the departing there, that this would change his persona so much and fool so many people. And I've got to say, Jay,
yes,
you to me are a little bit comparable when we talk each year, because I get you as a sort of the mild manner collector and fan during the Superman conversations. And then Jay Towers, Fox Detroit, comes on and he's a little bit more sort of Superman-esque. So I don't know. I think this goes well with you, man.
Oh, I try to hide this side of me to the TV audience all the time. That's why I can be myself with Jim and with you.
But I think these are wonderful. And many people are not familiar and not aware that, of course, that Christopher Reeve would have been wearing a wig virtually all of the time to ensure that there was continuity, color continuity, style continuity, and that they could change from one to the other without worrying about his the growth of hair really on himself personally. So he would have had a bald cap over the top. And in fact, when the heads would have been cast, and that's sort of evident perhaps on the rubber one, and I'm jumping around the table a little bit here, but that sort of finish, that very clean rounded finish that you have there, would have been part of the molding process while he's wearing the cap to right, pull all his hair down flat as well. So a huge amount of people would never be familiar that wigs are worn like this throughout filming.
Now, the pieces of what appear to be flesh that the wigs are adhered to, those are vintage or they are just for display? Those were recent pieces.
Oh, they're just for display purposes only.
Okay.
Yes. So the wig itself, all of the hair, so this is real hair that's hand tied into a very, very fine mesh that you can just see maybe on the front of this one here. I don't know whether we can catch that on the camera or not, but you can just see a little bit of the lacing that's there. And so this is a hugely time consuming process to make these wigs, and massively expensive as well. You know, this wigs like this to create could be a month's work each, easily, maybe longer. And so it's not something that can be quickly produced, and it's not something that's done cheaply either. But yeah, what we've done is we've actually just taken mannequin heads and then cut the mannequin heads away to support them properly, ensure that they maintain their form as well.
It's a great way to display them, by the way. Just when you, if you get one of these and want them in your home, I mean, that looks great.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It does, yeah. And it's really difficult. And it's something that we're considering all the time when we're preparing things for auction. As I say, it came into us looking like a rock star wig and a couple of rock star wigs here. And you've got to really think about what's going to draw the attention to the actual piece itself and not be overbearing or detract from it. So a lot of people might just take a white-faced stand or maybe even use a human head. And what you find with that sometimes is that can really detract, you know, and draw the eye away from what you want the focal point to be, which of course is the actual hair pieces themselves.
You know, fans are always excited to see anything that they feel like they could actually find in the film. And Jim, Valerie is a great friend of yours and of the podcast and of Caped Wonder. And boy, how excited would she be to see this red dress?
Oh, I'd love to walk in the door with that red dress in my hand and say, hey, Valerie, recognize this? Because Valerie is quite the archivist. She has saved everything from her career. And I even showed her a video one day of this beautiful blue dress she had on during the 1970s Oscars because she was a presenter. And she said, oh, I've got that dress in my closet right there. So for her to see this, she may not let me leave, you know, with it in my hands if I want it. But I love this dress. And you know what I love so much about it is the tag inside, Stephen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's really the winner on this. The dress itself is special just because we've never seen any of these float to market. Again, it's a dress that's worn in numerous scenes in the film, numerous key scenes in the film. And so you would expect that there would be a handful that would have been made for it. This particular one came out of a sale from Bermans and Nathans, who were the original costumers for the movie many, many years ago. It's again, something that's just been sitting in a loft for a number of years. But when you read the label inside it as well, you know, lying on ground, I think it is.
Yes.
It's not only one of the dresses that she would have worn. We know specifically which sequence this would have been used for as well. And that makes it really special.
Yeah, I love that. And I think this would make obviously a fantastic display in your home. People would wonder at first, I'm sure, why do you have a red dress on? But then when you show them one photo, yeah, of her laying next to that car in the Canada Rockies, they go, okay, there you go.
Yeah, and it's such a memorable scene. There's loads of publicity stills out there for it as well, yeah, because it worked so well and it was so visual within that environment as well. So I think this is an amazing thing to surface. And it, as I said many times before, we never know from one year to the next what somebody's going to walk through the door with. This came through to us just a couple of months before we closed the catalogue for this year's auction. It was just like, wow, that's amazing. You know, it's just there it is, still surviving, still got the label inside it. And it's just a wonderful opportunity for us to bring it to collectors around the world.
Well, whoever wins it definitely needs to put that photograph either on the wall behind it or in front of it. It just, that would be just wonderful looking.
Hey, yes. Let's talk about that yellow script. Is that the autograph script that's in the auction this year?
Yes, absolutely. So this is from Superman 4, of course, and this is signed by Christopher Reeve and Gene Hackman. It's rare to see something like this actually signed by key cast as well. So I think to that extent, I don't think I've actually seen a Superman script like this signed by cast previously. Is it something that you guys have come across?
I've never seen that, nor have I ever seen it labeled combined dialogue and continuity post-production release script. I've never seen any script called that.
Yeah, that the script in itself is interesting, plus the autographs.
Yes. Plus the autographs,
Yes, absolutely. So this has been used specifically for exactly what it says on the script. Ultimately, this is where they're going back and working through, so post-principal photography, where they're working back through to ensure that all the dialogue lines up with the shooting, you know, when they're going back into the sound booth, where they're doing audio clips that haven't necessarily been picked up well on studio or on location. And this would be the master document that they would be referring to throughout that process. And I've seen a number of these over the years for Bond films and a number of other movies as well. They don't generally survive just because they're so late in the production. And once that element of it wraps up, you know, it's job done, away they go in the bin. But somebody had the foresight there during that process and during that sort of end of production process to actually get these guys to sign it, which I think is a wonderful memento. And it's great to have those two signatures on the one document together.
Absolutely. And I think something else that's of note is it indicates in there 1 hour and 32 minutes, which is 92 minutes. And that is the length of the Japanese Laserdisc and not the theatrical cut, which means it's got a couple of deleted scenes in it, Stephen.
I knew that, Jim. I knew that. Yeah, I was going to come to that in a minute.
Yeah. We don't want to run out of time with you, and I know we're almost out of time. So let's talk about those Clark Kent glasses. Those are they are called standing glasses, right?
Yes, absolutely. Now, these have come to us directly from one of the senior prop guys who worked on Superman 1 and Superman 2. He's had them in his prop box since he worked on the film all those years ago. He was absolutely adamant that they were the on-screen worn glasses by Clark Kent. And we spent an awful long time going through all of the reference photos, images, on-set stills that we could find. And we couldn't find any reference to these being on-screen during filming. You both be very familiar. Some other people might not be familiar who are listening in and who are watching, that often for stand-ins, they'll have a cheaper version of something that's just comparable so that they can set up lighting, they can set up the shot correctly. So this is what we believe these are. So I think that's the most likely attribution for them. We would love to have said that we could actually find this iteration scene on screen, but there are differences, predominantly to the stems on the side of the glasses there, which are actually thicker with the version that you see Christopher Reeves wear. A wonderful memento from the film. He was obviously very disappointed that when we had to go back to him and say, unfortunately, even though you've had them in your prop box for some 40 years, they're not actually the ones that you see during filming, but they're almost certainly going to be the stand-in pair because they're just so close.
Yeah, I've never seen a pair like this before. So this is really exciting that you've added this.
So before we wrap up, obviously there's always great paperwork and production binders and storyboards and things like that. And that goes back to some of the conversations we've had in the past, that there are things that you can get from a production of a film that are a little more cost effective for people that, you know, maybe can't get some of the bigger things, but you have a lot of that this year.
Yeah, we do. And actually, we've got a lovely set of artworks on the board here behind me. Maybe hopefully you can see some of those if we go in a little bit closer there. Wow. And this is some of the storyboards here from the opening sequences of Superman 3, of course. I love this set. It's one of two sets of hand-drawn artworks that we have in the film. I'm just going to step back a little bit. Some of this, you'll probably have to speak to this, Jim and Jay, whether or not this is exactly frame by frame, because I know that you'll know it frame by frame, mm-hmm. as to whether it maps out exactly like this. But it is a really nice key set of art. Great illustrations here that you can see of Superman and his chest, the initial logo coming up here. Of course, this is the photo booth sequence here, which we've all talked about previously, where he uses the photo sets and tears one off. But these are really, really wonderful illustrations, and virtually every single frame either has Superman or Clark Kent in it. So you each one features something where you could take just one of these and frame it individually and have it on the wall. And that in itself would tell the story. So I think these are superb.
Well, I think I would frame the one that shows our friend Aaron Smolinski in it, Jay, and then get him to autograph it. Or
yeah, that'd be great.
Frame it that way.
That's him in the film. Stephen, tell everybody how they can participate in this year's prop store auction and the dates. And it's a 3-day auction this year.
It is. It's a 3-day auction this year. We've added another day. So last year was 2 days. There's more items in it this year than ever before. So we've got just under 1,100 lots. It's going to run from the 9th to the 11th of November, 3 p.m. UK time. So that's about 7 a.m. on the west coast of the U.S. and about 11 a.m. on the east coast of the U.S., we've added another day this year because we just had that much great content come in. And it's also really important to us that we don't just have super expensive stuff that's tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of pounds. We want to have items for all budgets. So that means us adding more lower value content to suit all collectors, as I say, their requirements. And that means we've added more this time. Live streamed around the world. You can register right now at propstore.com/live auction. The full catalogue is live 12th of October.
And you've got, it looks like, 25 separate Superman lots. So there's plenty to choose from.
Lots of super stuff in here. Yeah, absolutely. Thankfully, so I can keep you guys excited and interested.
Always. Hey, if you had just one item, we'd be excited. But this is such a diverse collection. I love it.
Yeah, and from so many different sources over the whole year that we've been cataloging ready for this sale. That's what's so fun. As I say, we never know what's going to walk through the door.
We always hone in on things you say, like, oh, we just, you know, we found this dress up in the loft. And what else is up in that loft? That's what I want to know.
I ask those questions every time. What else have you got? Right. For these to surface from the Meddings family after all these years, and they've sold things previously. It's just like, what? What else is buried in your attic? Or
yeah. Can I go through your garage boxes, please? Yeah,
right.
Yes. Me too.
Stephen Lane. It's always great to have you on. Thank you so much. You know, we'll be watching the auction and sending everybody to register, and it's going to be fantastic this year. I don't remember a year with so much Superman stuff. And beyond that, it just, you know, once the auction, once the catalog is out, I mean, from the elf costume behind you to Spider-Man and Batman, I mean, this auction has everything. So we hope everybody will watch and participate. And thank you, as always, for being with us.
It's been a pleasure, and it's been a lot of fun, man. Always love chatting with you guys.
It's great to see you, Stephen.
Lovely to see you too, man. Take care of yourself. See you guys.
You too. Bye.
And there he goes, the great Stephen Lane. Jim, fans have been asking, hey, when's the next podcast? We work hard on putting these together, but this one was easy today. Boy, I mean, you mentioned it. How many? Was it 24 items this year?
It's actually 25 separate lots, Jay.
Wow.
And you know, if you bid on and win the lot with all the photographs from Superman 2, you've got a whole bunch of new collectibles. And I don't know, that Valerie Perrine dress is really getting me excited. I may have to, I don't know what I'm going to do. Should I click the bid now button? I don't know what I'm going to do. Yeah, I really don't. I mean, you know, you and I always get excited about all of this and what will display the best, because we love to display items. And you especially have such a great office to display things. I can completely see a couple of wigs sitting in that right behind you. And maybe Nod needs a companion.
Maybe. You never know. Listen, you know what? There's so much great stuff. It's hard to really choose. But I will tell you that it is a really, really impressive auction this year. And if you're a Superman fan, and listen, I mean, we got a little sneak preview of some other items in the catalog, it, no matter what kind of superhero fan you are, you really have it all. I mean, you saw that Tobey Maguire Spider-Man costume behind him and Will Ferrell's costume from Elf. I mean, Steven said he wore that to a party. So, I mean, they've had all these great things and the value of them is unbelievable.
It really is. I think some people are going to need to buy some mannequins.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, there's no way you just want to stick that in the closet. You've got to put it out like the one you've got on display behind you. I mean, it's just putting it out, going it every day, like you talked about. You walk in your office, you smile because all this stuff makes you happy. You've always said that, Jay. And there are a lot of great items here to make you smile every day.
Well, listen, I'm hoping that any of our listeners or viewers today, any of these items come into your possession over time or any of your Superman special items, always share them with us. We love to see pictures of them. You could send them to Jim or to the Facebook page, but we love to see how you display your items as well, because that's, as you can see with Jim's office, my office, it's again, brings great happiness when we get home.
Oh yeah. And what I loved about this particular lot or lots, Jay, is that Prop Store has beautifully displayed these items for you, such as the miniature flying figures.
Right.
They have already got a stand. They're ready to go. You take them out of the box, put them on display, and you're done. You don't have to go out and look for anything to display them on.
Well, we thank you, everybody, for watching this special edition. And if you're listening on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you listen to podcasts, listen, you heard some great things today. But go to the Facebook page, go to CapeWonder.com and check out the video and the pictures. We have some real detailed photos of the things Stephen was showing us with the camera today, and we think you'll enjoy them. So we will be back with a couple more episodes before the end of the year, so keep looking forward to those. And Jim, until then,
stay super, of course.
You've been listening to the Caped Wonders Superman podcast on the iHeartRadio app. Jay Towers is a Detroit TV anchor and morning radio host on 100.3 WNIC Detroit. Follow Jay on Instagram and Twitter at Jay Towers. Jim Bowers is the founder and editor of CapeWonder.com, the home of Caped Wonder Superman imagery. Follow Jim on Instagram at Cape Wonder and on Twitter at Cape Wonder Jim.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.